You ready? Good morning. My name is Edgar Fleury, Special Magistrate. Could you please state your names for the record?
Doug Mack.
Melissa Cullen.
Kevin Wenrick.
Well, could you put the speaker together? I can't hear you.
Sure. Kevin Wenrick.
Okay, very good. Do you have a business card, sir?
I do, yes, sir.
I'd appreciate if I have a copy of that. Mr. Wenrich? Wenrich, or not. Is that correct? Thank you, sir. All right. Could you all raise your right hand, please? Some swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God.
I do.
All right. Have you been before a special magistrate previously?
Not in this county, but once previously in a different county.
Okay, but have you read the opening statement as to
yes.
the position of the special magistrate? You understand?
Yes, I understand.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
All right, we'll let the property appraiser present their evidence first, then you, and then we'll give you some time back and forth for a rebuttal.
Thank you.
But we don't want to whip a dead horse like I did in the previous hearing. Okay.
Is it Wenrick? Is that how... That's just the same information that I had sent to you,
okay.
just so you know.
Thank you.
And also, do me a favor, get close to the mics so I can hear you, and also especially for the recordings. If I don't hear on the recordings, I may miss something that may help either party, and I want to make sure that I get a clarification. Okay, very good. Ms. Cullen, please proceed.
Okay, the parcel ID number for this property is R31. 223-17-2747-0000-0020. The just, assessed, and taxable value is $4,938,048. Okay. If you will, turn to page 15 in my packet. Kevin, I'm going to explain how these properties work to the magistrate very briefly. If I forget something at the end, feel free to add to it, or if I'm mistaken something. Okay. This is a low-income housing. Okay. This is a low-income housing tax credit apartment project. Now, these properties are designed where the government provides funding and financing to the developers, and they are on a land use restriction agreement where the property is restricted for a specified time period to be developed with these low-income apartments. Now, in their land use restriction agreements, it specified at a minimum what the developer or owner, so to speak, it'll say if you have X number of units, a certain percent of them have to be based, their rents have to be based on a percentage of the area media income for that area.
I'm very familiar with
these. You are familiar with these, so I don't need to go through all this?
No.
Wonderful.
But is there any specific... Is there any specific information pertaining to the agreement that's unique to this party?
They are. It's not really unique, but this specific property has 47% of the units.
47% set aside?
Yes, set aside at 50% of the AMI.
Oh, 50%, okay.
And then 53% at 60% of the AMI.
Whoops, wait a second.
53%.
15 or 50?
53.
53. 53. Yeah, right. You said 47% is set aside for 50%, right?
Correct.
And what's the 53? I thought you said also 50. That's what I'm asking.
Then the other 53% of the units must be set aside at 60% of
so,
the AMI.
That's what I didn't get.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, additionally, in their agreement, it says that the gross or max rent, which would include their utility allowance, cannot exceed 30% of the income computation.
30%. Where do you have that in writing?
This is in the agreement that is in the addendum.
Okay.
As well as I'm mentioning it, and I can show you the page when we get there where it is in my packet.
Okay.
So this property is called Nantucket Cove, and I'm on page 15. It's located on the west side of Commercial Way, north of County Line Road in Spring Hill. It's a 128-unit property built in 06. It's got a unit mix of 1, 2, 3, and 4-bedroom units. And on page 15, you can see that I've shown, based on the information I have, the unit breakdown and the square footage. And I've shown the unit amenities and property amenities. Based on information that I have, and I'll get to that in a minute, it was 98% occupied for 2019. Since you're familiar with these, if you look on page 17, you're aware that per the Florida statutes for tax purposes, the subject property must be valued based on the actual rental income. And that because of the way that we must value these for tax purposes, a cost approach and sales comparison approach would not be applicable. If you'll please turn to page 19. So I'm faced with every year I must, for several properties, including these, I send out an income and expense request in January. And I ask that that information be returned to our office by April 1st of each year. In the case of the subject, in the 7 years I've been working here, I've never received that information between the time frame of when I send the request and by the deadline or even after that. So what I started doing last year is, because I have about 15 in the county of these LIHTCs, and if you read all of their agreements, the percent set aside and the percent of AMIs are all different. So I don't feel that it would be accurate if they're not providing me with their information to accurately value it, to just do an across the board valuation. So what I do is I physically go out to the properties. Doug and I did this January last year. We go in the leasing offices and I say to them, what are your max rents? What are your utility allowances, and what are your base rents? Now, I never get given a breakdown of if a certain percent need to be at the set-aside amount for the percentage of AMI. I'm never told which units that's allocated to.
You go there and ask them specific information?
I ask, and I have my notes in here. I say, what's your rent on your one bedroom? What's your utility allowance? What's your, and I total it up to get the max, and I know the base and the max, but they never will give me, or do I ever receive, I have a few that cooperate with me, where they might say, okay, well, we have so many of our one bedrooms that are at 50% of the AMI, and then we have so many that are at 60%, so I'm literally doing the guessing game.
So you never get it in writing, but you go there and ask questions, you get the answers to those questions?
Not all of it. I don't know what I'm saying is if they have different, like this one has a certain percent at 50% AMI and another percent at 60%. I'm not told which units are at that.
You do not know.
Right. Okay. So I'm estimating. So another thing that I do is I go on the Florida Housing Finance Corp website and I get a printout from them showing the occupancy that was reported to them. So I rely on that as well. I typically do not get much expense information for these property types. I know their expenses tend to be higher so that the owners are able to be paid through the management and administrative. So what I do is I get the IREM Section 42 survey to estimate my expenses.
In other words, you'd be better served if you had that information and you haven't been provided.
Yes. Yes. On page 20, I've included the occupancy report from Florida Housing Finance Corp. And pages 21 through 24, I've included my information that I use to estimate my expenses. On pages 25.
Hold on.
Okay. Yeah, I know. You always have to tell me to slow down because I go fast.
Right. The subject is in the yellow, right?
Correct.
Now, where are you getting all these percentages?
If you look, see how it's highlighted in yellow?
Yeah.
And it gives you every month's occupancy, and then at the very end, it has the average occupancy for the year.
No, at least you got the. At least you were able to get the occupancy.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And then the next pages are the survey and how I calculated the per unit expenses. I have like the actual survey as well as my computations of it. Okay, sorry. Pages 25, 26, and 27, I've just included capitalization rate surveys. If you look on page 28, I'm showing my direct cap. Now, one thing I want to point out is, just bear with me here, we're going to look between page 28 and page 62.
Okay.
So on page 62, you can see the notes that I took when Doug and I went and visited the property on January the 9th.
Well, that's what you interviewed, and that's what you got.
Yes. So I took the base rents, which is without the utility allowance, and I applied these to the rental amounts used in my direct cap. I used a 1% other income amount. I'm back on page 28, sir.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question here for a second?
Let's
go to 62 because you're referring to 62 working back to your income.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. In 62, the one bedroom, 715 square feet. What is 654.16 is the rental. Those are the rentals, right?
715 is the max rent.
Right.
Which includes the utility allowance. 654.16 is what I was told the base rent was.
That's the base rent?
Yes.
So that column is the base rent?
Yes, sir.
And base. And the others are the square footage?
No, the others are the max rent.
Maximum?
Yes, which includes the utility allowance, which I don't use.
Okay. And then under minimum two times rent roll, 28,140, what does that represent?
That is the income per number of people in the household, the max income for the number of people. So if there's one person, the max income is 28,140.
Okay, this is dollars. Okay.
Yes.
Max. Okay.
And just to point out, if we look at, which I'll kind of explain later, if we look at the chart that I might – be able to just, I'm not sure if I have it here or not, but if you look at the chart that HUD provides where they show the 50 and 60% rent ranges for the different bedroom sizes, I think I have it in my rebuttal. My rents are within that range.
Okay.
But I'll bring that up more later.
The rents used in the range, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So for the expenses, you can see them all listed here. This was based, again, off that the survey that I mentioned previously. Now, on these properties, I do tend to estimate higher expenses than I would a typical apartment project to kind of give them the benefit of the doubt for the management, payroll, and administrative expenses. And then you can see I used an 8.25% cap rate. I loaded it with the millage to get the final value of the property. On page 31 and 32, and I believe it goes through 31 through 34, there is an email there that I know you'll read, but this is me just stating to the petitioner my position as far as handling these properties and that they didn't supply me with any information until September the 29th. And then they wanted me to make an adjustment based on that.
Okay.
And basically the rest of the packet has the low-income housing agreement, the property record card. It has the HUD charts for the fair market rents, my request letter for income, my credentials, and some legal information.
I noticed the rentals that you used were based on the rental that you obtained from the survey. On page 62.
Okay. Yes, when I physically walked in there.
Okay, fine. It's the same. All right. But the expenses are based on?
The IRM Section 42 publication.
Okay, expenses on IRM, okay. What page is that on?
That is on pages 21 through 24.
21 through 24, okay, good. All right.
That's it for now.
All right. The evidence provided by the property appraiser is Exhibit 1 and is admissible. Mr. Winry.
Yes, sir.
Please proceed.
Thank you.
Was there an exchange of evidence?
Yes, there was.
Okay.
May I present?
Please. Thank you, sir. From what I can gather, you have a copy of this.
Is it the same information you sent me? Okay. I got it. Mine. I'm good. Thank you, though.
Do you have a photograph like this on yours?
Somewhere, I think. I know what it looks like.
All right. Okay, sir. Ms. Rich, please proceed.
Thank you very much. Before I go into the details of the exchange of evidence that I provided to you, I'll give you a little bit of background about myself. My name is Kevin Winrick. I'm a direct employee of the general partner that owns this development.
You're an employee of the group.
I'm an employee, yes, sir, direct employee. We are investors in 102 low-income housing tax credit developments in 21 counties across Florida. So this is our primary business, is providing affordable housing. Nantucket, as we've mentioned, is one of those projects, which is a low-income housing tax credit development. As we've stated, the development is located in Spring Hill. It's comprised of 128 apartment units housed in 10 two-story buildings. We also have a separate building for a clubhouse, which contains a fitness studio and business center and a maintenance garage on site. In my package, I've included as Exhibit A the property record, but I didn't have any comments specifically addressed on the property record.
Do me a favor.
Yes, sir.
Tell me where area you're referring to as you're testifying, if you're referring to your document.
Okay. Yes, sir. I'm on page 2 of my document now.
2?
Yes, sir. So continuing on page 2, I wanted to address the issue of the presumption of correctness here. As we've already stated, that because this is a low-income housing tax credit community, there are our standards which are held for this appraisal, which are a little bit different than standard communities. And that is addressed in Section 193.17 of Florida statute, which the property appraiser has already presented. I have the full statute included as Exhibit C. But I'll just point out that there's two important areas in that statute that require that the actual rental income is considered in the assessed value and that any extended low-income housing agreement that is part of public record is also taken into consideration for that assessed value. I'm on page 2 now of my evidence, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Could you bear with me one second?
Yes, sir.
and it's probably an appraiser question, I'm reading here, that on October 24th, petitioner was providing pertinent information to the property appraiser, and you denied the request. I was just wondering what's going on.
Yes. In my packet, there is an email where...
In your packet.
In my packet.
So that.
And I'm going to touch on this in my rebuttal as well, but the short version is, and Kevin, I understand you're their employee. Nothing against Kevin. I like Kevin. But, you know, I get the impression that the partners or owners do not want to provide information because I deal with them on something else. And it's like, you know, I get the answer, other counties don't ask for that. And it's kind of like pulling teeth to get information from them. So I have a job that I have to do, and I have to estimate information to the best of my ability. And because of the problems with some of the other properties or one other property they own, the property appraiser feels that, you know, if we need to consider this information, they need to give it to us when they're supposed to and not after tax notices have been sent. And
well, they wouldn't accept it because they didn't provide it earlier.
Right. And I feel that they're wanting to see what their tax bill will be. And then if it's not to their liking, then they provide it. And I, again, give me the information beforehand and we wouldn't even be here.
Okay. Please proceed. I just want a clarification.
Thank you, sir. Okay. I was also going to address that email in a rebuttal format because I think it's relevant to speak to. I have that email in Exhibit B, but I don't think that it affects the information that I wanted to present today. Okay. So I'll address that later if I could. So I'm on page 3 of my evidence. As we take a look at a LIHTC property, I kind of wanted to walk through some of the other standard items that the property appraiser is going to take into consideration in our evaluation. Typically, you'll look at present cash value, but because this is a low-income housing tax credit development, it's very difficult to take a look at what a willing purchaser would pay and what a willing seller would pay for these developments. That's because these developments, when they're constructed, are granted tax credits. Those tax credits are used as incentives to generate equity, which reduces debt, which allows us to offer rents at a lower rate. Now, the investors receive those tax credits over a period of 10 years. After the 10-year period, there still is a compliance period, which lasts for a period of 15 years. So typically, LIHTC deals do not sell within the first 15 years because of those restrictions, because the investors want a return on those tax credits. After the 15-year period, the developments have an opportunity to be released from these rental restrictions through a period called a qualified contract. Now, Nantucket is unique in the fact that we have foregone our ability to be released from this agreement. So we're in this contract with Florida Housing for a period of 50 years. So this is a long-term commitment for us in providing these affordable housing communities. When looking at the highest and best use, you have to take a look at the extended low-income housing tax use agreement, and you would determine that the highest and best use for this property is its current use, which is as a LIHTC development. As far as the location is concerned, I've attached Exhibit D, and I apologize, my exhibits are not numbered, sir. But Exhibit D shows a map of Florida and Hernando County and some of the surrounding counties. And the purpose of this exhibit is just to demonstrate that the area median income for Hernando County is identical to Pinellas and Pasco County, and that this area median income is what drives the rents that we're allowed to charge. So the location might be important in a market rate development for a LIHTC community. Location is going to play less of a role because our rents will not change based on where we're located within the county. Even if we were to locate the same development in Pinellas or Pasco, our rents would be identical. When looking at the size of the project, the property appraiser has already detailed our unit mix, 24 one-bedroom, 40 two-bedroom, 32 three-bedroom, 32 four-bedrooms. When you look at size, the square footage is less relevant for light tech communities because our rents are determined based on the number of bedroom, not the square footage. If you're to look at the cost and present replacement value of a light tech development, no developer would go into a light tech development if it weren't for the benefit of the tax credits and favorable financing. So to look at a cost replacement or value, you wouldn't be able to do that without taking into consideration the tax credits and the financing, which statute prevents us from looking at. So the income approach is traditionally the most commonly referred to approach for assessing low-income housing tax rate communities. I'm on page 4 now, sir. Mm-hmm. And the comment here on our land and use restriction agreement, I've attached the exhibit as Exhibit E. It's Section 3A of that agreement, which specifies the requirement to provide housing at 50% of AMI for 47% of our units and 60% AMI for 53% of our units. So both the property appraiser and I are in agreement on the restrictions that are placed on this development. The issue is that the income, the rents that have been used in the projection, only reflect rents at 60%, and there's no consideration given for those units that are restricted at 50% of AMI. So to give some details on the actual rents, Exhibit F and Exhibit G detail our actual rents. And so in those two exhibits, there's similar information which has already been provided by the property appraiser's office, which talks about area median income and how you calculate rents based on set aside. I would like to look at Exhibit G specifically. The second page of that exhibit details the number of units that we have based on the set aside, and then the rents that we're allowed to collect.
What page is that?
I'm sorry, my exhibits are not numbered, but it's Exhibit G. It's the second page of Exhibit G,
B
sir.
Section?
G, sir.
Oh, G.
Okay. Yes, sorry. So this will detail the rents based on the set aside. It shows all the units that are at 50% set aside, 1, 2s, and 3s, and 4 bedrooms, and all the units that are at 60% set aside. The rents that you see listed here for the 60% set-asides are the same that the property appraiser has used in their valuation. So what's being missed here is the rents which are at 50% set-aside, sir. So this schedule supports how we come up with the actual maximum rental income of $1,194,435. Exhibit H of my exchange includes the income statement, the statement of operations, and a rental report. The rental report shows the rents which were being charged to each resident.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
I have.
Yes, sir.
The second paragraph under rental income, you said maximum potential gross is $99,000 plus. Okay, never mind.
Right. Per month.
Never mind. I read it wrong. Okay, I got it. Okay. Please proceed, sorry.
Thank you, sir. Exhibit A includes our statement of operations. I'm sorry, Exhibit H includes our statement of operations, as well as a rental report. The rental report, which is attached, shows each resident and the rents that are being charged to them on January 1st of 2020. The statement of operations is a complete statement of operations, which was provided to the property appraiser's office on September 24th. When I had asked for the informal conference. The information which is provided on this income statement has not been considered in the assessment of our property. The statement of operations will show that we have a net operating income of $354,158, which excludes real estate and personal property tax expense. If you were to compare the information that's on the statement of operations, sir, to the information that's been provided in the assessment by the property appraiser, you would see that our expenses are nearly identical. So we have no concerns with the expense assumptions or the cap rate, which has been used in the calculation of our assessed value. Our only concern is that the actual rents and the restrictions of the extended low-income housing agreement have not been considered in that assessment. If you were to follow Exhibit H, you take the net operating income of $354,158 and apply the cap rate which has been established by the property appraiser. You get a capitalized value of $3,589,042. Our tangible personal property taxes is assessed at $60,852. So if you deduct the assessed value of our tangible personal property, you have a net income value related to the real estate of $3,528,190, sir.
That's your assessment you're looking for?
We believe that more accurately reflects the just value of the development, and it's what we would like to have be considered. One thing I just want to point out, too, is in addition to the financials that we've provided, I like to also point out that because we're a low-income housing community, we sign an agreement with Florida Housing when we develop the project. So not only are we restricted on the income that we're allowed to charge our residents, but we're also committed to provide items which generate expenses on our behalf. And unfortunately, the property appraiser is only required to consider the income on these rental units. Not necessarily the expenses that are derived, but I still like to list some of the expenses that, as a LIHTC developer, we offer to our residents. So I'm continuing on page 4, and this is supported in the Exhibit B of our extended low housing.
Excuse me, back to page 4 again?
Yes, page 4 of my document, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
And I'm just detailing some of the amenities that we are required to provide as a low-tech housing community. We offer our residents an exercise room with equipment, a community center clubhouse, swimming pool, playground, volleyball court, and all these have been agreed with Florida Housing before the development has been constructed. Additionally, as a LIHTC community, we're required to offer to our residents services at no charge, and those services include home ownership program, an after-school program for children, first-time home buyer seminars, quarterly visits by healthcare professionals, resident activities, financial counseling, computer lab, and resident assistance referral program. So we offer our residents a plethora of additional programs within our community as required by the extended low housing income agreement.
Okay.
On page 5, sir, and the last part of the information that I had provided in my exchange information was comparing some similar low-income housing tax credit developments. As the property appraiser has already stated, a lot of these developments, each one is unique. They're different based upon the number of units that they offer, what their unit mix is, and what these set-asides are for each of those developments. However, we're all bound by the same restrictions, and that is rents which are restricted based on the area median income for Hernando County. So what I've done is I've taken 8 LIHTC developments that are located here within the county, and I have used the extended low housing income agreement for each of those developments. And in Exhibit I, I've listed here the unit count based 1, 2, 3, and 4 bedroom for each of those 8 comparative properties. I've listed the set aside based on the area median income restrictions on those units. And what I've done is I've attempted to assign an assessed value to each of those units based on the income that each of those units generates. So if each of these properties are assessed based on the income that the units can arrive at, you would expect to see that a one-bedroom unit that's rented at Nantucket at 60% set aside is assessed similarly to a one-bedroom unit with the same restrictions at a similar development. So Exhibit I attempts to allocate the assessed value based on the income ability or the ability of each of those units to generate income based on their rents. If you'll return back to page 5, sir. This presents a summary of that. Mm-hmm. You'll see that Nantucket Cove Apartments is assessed at $38,579 a unit, and then I list the assessed value for each of the other 8 comparison properties. I think that their per unit assessed value is misleading, though. So I'd like to direct your attention to the second part of that chart where it breaks out the assessed value if you were to assign it based on the unit size and the set aside. So here you would expect to see, whereas Nantucket's one bedroom, 50% set aside unit is assessed at $27,000 a unit, Spring Haven is assessed at $22,764, a lower valuation. So you can see that example run throughout. There's not many other developments in Hernando that have 50% set asides that I could reference. 60% set aside is what you see most often in a LIHTC development. So I had more comparisons here. Here you can see that I've allocated the assessed value for Nantucket or a one bedroom at $32,375 in comparison to Spring Haven, it's $27,295, Brookhaven, $27,058, Hammock Ridge, $31,136, and so on. So the purpose of presenting this information is not to ask for equalization with these other properties, but just to consider that the per unit assessed value for Nantucket appears to be higher than some of our similar comps. So in conclusion, we believe that pertinent information which was provided to the property appraiser's office was not considered in our assessment. Included in that information is actual rental income. The property appraiser has not recognized the rental units which are set aside at 50%, however, they have recognized the units which are set aside at 60%. Therefore, they have not given the full consideration of the extended low-income housing agreement, which is required. I think that there's some discrepancy if you look at comparison between other LIHTC developments within the county and Nantucket, which might suggest that appraisal practices applied to Nantucket might differ to those other developments. We're not disputing the cap rate, sir. We're only really disputing the income, which has been considered in our assessment. And as I've stated, if we take the actual income, which has been provided on the statement of operations, and apply the cap rate, we come with the assessed value of $3,528,190, sir.
Petitioner's evidence is Exhibit 2 and is admissible.
Okay. First, I'm going to go through very efficiently and quickly some calculations. I want you to flip in my packet to page 97.
Your packet?
Yes, sir. Are you there?
I am there.
Okay. So this property has, like I was briefly explaining before, 50% AMI and 60% of the units, or excuse me, 60% AMI. And if you look over to the right, and you look at the 1, 2, 3, and 4 bedrooms, again, my base rents are in between that range because I have no idea how many one bedrooms are at 50% of the AMI, how many one bedrooms, two bedrooms, three bedrooms, four bedrooms are at 60%. I have no way of knowing all of this information. So again, I have to use what I have at the time that we value the properties. So I just wanted to point that out. I am going to give both of you some rebuttal information.
So in essence, the end there, the last box there, it says rental units by number and bedroom. You're not, there's no way you can tell how many units of each type.
Right, I'd be guessing. So, you know, the rents that they gave me at the property are obviously their max at the 60%, but I have no way of guess. Like, I'd be guessing is basically the best way to put it. I can't guess. Usually as an appraiser, I've been doing this long enough, I can figure stuff out. But with these, you would literally be guessing. There's just no way of knowing that. And usually the leasing agents won't get into a lot of detail like that with you. They'll just give you quick and dirty information that they would give to the general public, if you will. So I want you to look at... There's a spreadsheet that I gave you that are the LAHTC 2020 values.
Yes, okay.
Now, this is in reference to comparing assessments. While there's a statute on that you can compare assessments, I wanted to point out that you can see that I have listed some of the same properties that he had, and some of them are different ones. Some of the properties that he had were senior, two of them were senior properties. At these senior properties, a lot of times they're set aside and area median income is, their set aside might be 50% at 30% of the AMI, and then they might have the other 50 at 60%. So their income levels are most of the time a lot lower than an apartment property or an LHTC property that is not a senior property. Also another one that was included, Magnolia Gardens, that he included, is a county-owned property. It's very run down and in very poor shape. And honestly, it's 100% exempt. I don't even bother with it, to be completely honest. But you can see in my chart, I have shown the properties in the county, because like I said, I have about 15 of them that I felt were comparable to the subject. I've given you their names, locations. They're all what I call general LAHTC properties. There's no senior living restrictions on them. I gave you the units. I showed you the just value per unit. I also showed you the unit mix and what their set-aside amount is per their housing agreement. So you can see how much those vary. And I want the petitioner to understand when I value these, even though I can't guess, I don't do an across-the-board valuation where I'm valuing them in mass, because it wouldn't be appropriate for me to do that. I try to work with what I have and make the best guesstimation, if you will. And just to point out, two of these on the bottom, Springhaven, they supply me with their information every year. And I believe the Norborn Estates properties do as well. I'm not 100% sure, but this, you know, when they supply it to me, it's based on their actuals. If you will turn to the next page. One thing I noticed, and I don't know if it was a mistake, is, when the petitioner did their statement of operations, there's a different rental income amount than was what was stated two different places in their packet. So what I did is I did basically a side-by-side comparison. In the petitioner's side, I put the correct rental income amount. And I just went through, and almost all of their numbers are the same, with the exception of the total rental income correction. And I excluded their, I believe it was called, refurbishment and replacement expense. And I'll tell you why. One thing based on my experience with multifamily properties is the CPAs, financial officers, if you will include that as an expense for IRS purposes. Now, my whole thing is those are usually something where they're going and they're cleaning up the property after the resident has left, or they are remodeling the property. And when you rent an apartment, and even with these, you're paying a deposit as well as a redecorating fee that every resident has to pay. So what concerns me is I don't see that in the income, but yet it's deducted as an expense. So that was the one expense that I excluded on my side-by-side information. So you can see based on that, I feel that their value is actually higher than what I have it at. Another thing that I took a look at is the tangible personal property that was deducted from the petitioner's value. It is my opinion, and I might be wrong, but that you can't deduct the value of the tangible personal property because that is a market value. These properties, when we're valuing them for tax purposes based on what the legislator has mandated to us that we have to do. We're not valuing them on a true market value, so it might not be comparing apples to apples by backing out that TPP value. Yes.
Their income projection is lower than yours. Their expenses are lower than yours. Your net operating income is lower than theirs. The question is, are those the actual figures that they have on the petitioner?
The petitioner in his packet under the total rental income, in two different places in the packet, states that the total rental income was $1,194,456, but in the statement of operations states that it's a different number. That's slightly less, not much, by like $10,000.
I'd have to take a look at their income approach.
Right, right.
Because you're showing less gross income, NOI, and a lower value, and they're showing a higher value. So what I'm trying to – well, I'd have to take a little compare. Okay.
Yeah, and what I did was I excluded an expense in there, so that's why it's showing a higher value. And the last thing I want to touch on is – so without reading the email and getting into this whole big discussion about it, basically, Mr. Wenrich contacted me during trim and requested summary information for both this property and another property. I provided him with quick summaries on that information. He wrote me an email back saying that they filed petitions on these properties so we could discuss them, and provided me at that point on September 29th with the information that I had sought from the beginning of the year. And I responded quite lengthy in an email basically explaining the position of our office and the position of the property appraiser. You know, we tend to give people the benefit of the doubt initially. And when year after year and time after time, they don't give us the information that we need, especially something like this, I my hands are tied. I wrote up something, you know, to discuss all that, but I think I've made my point, so I'm not going
to
continue.
You don't have to whip it that horse.
With that. Yes, exactly.
I'm looking at their 2019 statement, basically the way it's written up. They indicate the gross potential, or the actual gross is $1,183,000. You have $1,194,000. How that? Since you're using the actuals, how could they be different?
Because if you look in their packet, and I can tell you where it is. Bear with me here.
I know you're using different vacancy factors.
Go to page 4 of his packet.
Okay.
In the section rental income from restricted units, the second paragraph, that's one place. And then I also believe if you look a few pages prior to his statement of operations in the addendum.
What exhibit?
Exhibit H, I believe it is.
Okay.
Prior to H. It's about 3 or 4 pages prior to H. It says Nantucket Cove max rent calculation summary.
Excuse me. You said H or H? Oh.
H.
H, okay. I'm looking at H. Oh, okay.
There's a total number there for the rent, which is also that same 1,194,000 number.
Okay.
So I assume that that was just a typographical in the statement of operations. I'm not sure.
Okay, I'll take a closer look later. Okay. That's it. All right. The property appraiser's rebuttal evidence is Exhibit 3 and is admissible. Okay. Sure. Proceed.
Thank you. I don't have materials to submit for rebuttal, but if I could just walk through some of the property appraiser's evidence presented. If I could address... Yes, sir.
You have a copy for me?
No, sir. If I could verbally just walk through some items. And I'll address the question on the difference in the potential gross rental income. The information that's included on the statement of operations, sir, is our actuals. So what happens is that each year... HUD comes out with the area median income, so that usually comes out after the beginning of the year, and we're allowed to increase rents usually around April. So what you're seeing there is the actual rents that were collected for the year, so that includes last year's rental rates and this year's rental rates because the rents changed in the middle of the year. So I agree that the $1,194,000 is the actual rents as of January 1, but the difference in that figure is because part of the year is a lower rate versus the end of the year. In the property appraiser's information that they've used in the assessment, they're using a 2% vacancy, which is supported by the actual physical occupancy on the Florida Housing Report. I don't dispute that, but I think that there's a difference between physical occupancy and economic occupancy. The physical occupancy that's reported on those reports just shows where we are at on a specific day of the month for 12 periods. But there's a period where you have residents that skip. They don't pay their rents, and so that's not reported as a physical vacant unit, but there's costs that are associated with that. So typically your economic vacancy loss is greater than your actual physical occupancy, sir. So I think 2% is a bit low.
98%?
Yeah, we are averaging around 98%. And I would say that in Hernando County, the other LIHTC deals probably average around 94-95%. We offer the same product as our competitors. Possibly it's our residents prefer to live at our location. That's why our occupancy is higher. But that's a reflection on the management of the development, not on the assumptions that I think you would apply to this group of properties. Regardless, though, our expenses are in line with the assumptions that the property appraiser have used. It's really only the income that's different, and that's because they've not given consideration to those units that are set aside at 50%. I agree that the information was provided late on September the 24th. But I think that I have the right to request an informal conference, which was denied. I also have the right to file a petition, that those two rights are not mutually exclusive. I understand completely that the information is not available and should be provided earlier, but it can't be released until I have all owners' approval on that. And so typically, I represent the general partner, and we are 1% owners of this development. The limited partners are usually large companies like Bank of America, for example. And we are one of many investments in their portfolio. I have to have written approval to release any information by both partners. And so I often have a challenge to get the authorization to release information by the limited partner to provide to the property appraiser's office so that they can make an accurate assessment. So I agree that it's an inconvenience. It would be better served to provide the information earlier rather than later. But I think that the information was provided, and we could have come to an agreement yesterday and withdrawn the petition, but the information wasn't considered. And so that means that the assessed value, I believe, does not accurately represent the appropriate assessment.
One question, this point, not a point of clarification, but just
yes,
for the record. When they refer that you have to use the actual rental, are they indicating that if it's a 50% occupied, that you use the actual rentals based on that 50%, or is it the actual rental rate? It's the actual rental rate and not the actual occupied. Okay.
Right, I agree with you.
That's the way the statute's very loosely written, but
okay.
I would agree with that as well. Yeah.
So it's the rental that's the actual to be used.
Yeah, there's no discussion in the statute about how to handle vacancy or how to handle expenses. It just is the actual income, and that's it. And that's how other counties tend to interpret it.
Okay. All right. If I didn't indicate it previously, the evidence rebuttal is Exhibit 3 was admissible. I think I mentioned that earlier. I think I have enough information to come up with a decision. I have to read some areas, the point of clarification, proceed. End of petition.